Okay, so here we are, another episode of We Talk Mavs. I'm here with Kirk Seriousface. He and I are pretty soon going to start a show in which we go around and interview marathon runners about their technique. We're going to call it Kirk Serious Pace. Kirk, you and I have similar thoughts about Dwight Howard, which is that it was a mistake to go after, well, to have the plan where that was the end result, period, in the first place. You want to talk about that a bit?
You know, I mean, I feel like to a certain degree it's been hashed out fairly well, but it's worth talking about one last time before we start getting excited for Andrew Bynum. You know, I understand why Dallas did what they did, but to approach it like their plan was the only angle was the biggest mistake. You've been talking about assets and how they're just as, if not more important than cap space, since it became really obvious around the trade deadline that Dallas just had nothing to work with.
Yep.
And I think, you know, in retrospect, that was our biggest mistake, by thinking that we could strip down the team and still convince a superstar of this era to come to Dallas just to play with one other person is probably the lasting mistake.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's about right. You know, from my perspective, teams should give themselves a lot of opportunity to succeed. And to do that, you have to have a lot of different ways to succeed. You know, what is not, you know, I think cap space is the least useful way to succeed, as I've said before, because it's the only way that only gives you a chance to offer somebody the same contract they're getting from somewhere else, and then they decide to sign yours for whatever reason, all other forms, somebody ends up on your team. But specifically in the Mavericks case, when they had Dirk's $20 million contract and then Sean Marion's $9 million contract, it meant 2 years of not having any other kind of asset to use. And obviously when we're looking at Gerald Wallace and Chris Humphreys being traded for Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, when we're looking at, you know, a second round pick getting traded the other day for like $20 million worth of cap space and some players, obviously it seems like that was a mistake. Do you think Dallas was in the running for Dwight?
I think at some point or another, Cuban is going to release a broken down, kind of streamlined version of what they talked about with Dwight for 3 hours in Los Angeles.
Right.
You know, going into that meeting, I didn't feel very good for all the reasons we discussed, but when I heard the meeting was 3 hours, I thought two things. One, they had a really good conversation, or they just had a 3 hour long presentation to give them. I have a feeling it's a mix of both.
Yep.
But from what I've heard from, you know, the two-man games, Brian Gutierrez, he thought he actually has seen the presentation and knew what they were talking about and said it was fantastic.
All right.
Obviously he's biased. We both are. But there had to have been a really big emphasis on coaching and the training staff. And I think, you know, given a little more of a nucleus for Dwight to join, it really might have worked. Because even though Cuban was the first one to announce that we were out of the Dwight running, I do think that we had as good a chance as Los Angeles, maybe even a little better, since we're hearing that he didn't want to be there. So,
yep.
You know, we're always the bridesmaid, but it was what it was.
Yeah, you talked to, Steve Nash came out the other day and said that he didn't feel confident going into the meeting with Dwight. He always felt Dwight didn't want to be there, and after the meeting he felt okay. Now, you know, you're an office man. You've been to a lot of meetings in your life. It doesn't seem like a 3 hour meeting is the way to woo these guys, since if you can describe your experience with 3 hour meetings, probably not that sexy, right?
No, and that's why I thought the whole concept of meetings was ludicrous, because I think, you know, he had made up his mind before that. I agree with the Lakers. I think that we stood a good chance, but that guy has probably not sat in the same place for more than 30 minutes since he was 15 years old.
Right.
There's no way he sat down for 3 hours and thought, man, this is fantastic. It was the whole concept of the meeting was to pander to his ego. I'm sure he was thinking in the back of his mind, well, if they come in with a dynamite pitch, maybe I'll consider them. But the Rockets were always, you know, at the start of this race, or whenever free agency really started after the finals, Houston had a clear lead and everybody else was playing catch up. So, you know, we could have rationalized the way a lot of our colleagues did about what could and couldn't happen. But I mean, if you just look at the basic framework, Houston was the smart place to go.
Okay, great. Moving on to Jose Calderon, you know, I think it's fair to say you're the dissent on this particular Supreme Court decision over at Mavs Moneyball, the Scalia, if you will. And, you know, I look at it and I say this is something the Mavs should have started doing 2 years ago, adding reasonable players at reasonable contracts. You get a guy like Calderon, it ups everything that you do on offense. You know, 3 experience points or whatever the kids are doing in their role-playing games. Expound on your feelings here.
I like it from a basketball perspective. He's going to help the offense immensely. Anybody that's watched Dallas going back to when Dirk was drafted, we have had high-quality guards for almost a decade. Longer than a decade. Even Devin Harris was more effective than Darren Collison.
Yep.
Collison is so inept at running point guard that I think we were all shocked at how bad he was. So Calderon is going to help from a basketball perspective. I just don't like the length. And I don't like the rationalization from almost everyone that says, well, you have to sign him to a 4-year deal if you want to consider using the stretch provision of the CBA. Meaning, if you decide to cut him in his 4th year, then you can spread the cost of that last year of his contract over 2 years. Why would you sign someone with the intent or with the possibility in mind that you might cut him? Now, I don't think they will, because I understand what everyone's saying. He's going to remain effective. He's of the frame and of the basketball IQ to where he'll be good for years. I just don't know why that is going to help for that long a period of time. I mean, he is a defensive liability, and so is Dirk. So having 40% of your 5-man lineup not being good at defense seems problematic over the long run.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, the stretch thingy is another one of these Mark Cuban ideas that is not very good. I agree with you there. I think if you cut one player with the stretch provision, every player in the NBA now knows that your 4-year deals are not 4-year deals. They're just suckering guys in to be cut whenever the Mavericks feel like it. I think it would be too detrimental to your brand to use more than once. I like the idea of the point guard position, at least having one really good passing point guard locked down for 4 years, given the turnover these last couple years, but, you know, maybe you're the brave one. Maybe the rest of us are, you know, skittish from the constant turnover that just having something to hold on to, you know, is a lot for us.
Well, maybe it's a combination of both the money and the length. You know, I just got finished listening to the CBS Eye on Basketball podcast, and they were talking about how, you know, the length bothered them, but it was the money too. And I think it must be the combination that vexes me, because if somebody had said, look, we're spending $20 million over 4 years, so $5 million a season for Jose Calderon, I'd be gleeful. But when you add almost another, you know, it's $29 million, you're adding $8 or $9 million more to the contract, it just makes me a little skittish. Now, you know, as I've explained to our commenters, that I'm profoundly negative when I'm writing sometimes isn't necessarily fair, but it's just one of these things that I can't get over, because it feels like an overcorrection. I guess that's the best way to phrase it.
Okay.
You went from doing nothing to thinking, well, this is a great idea, and I don't know. The contract details will come out soon, so let's just say we find out the last year is a team option. Then I'm probably going to be pretty excited that this happened, and I'll take back a lot of my Twitter grumpiness. Hey, this is a great, you know.
Fair enough.
Perfect.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you raise a lot of valid points there. For me, like I say, if the Mavericks had been doing this all along, if they hadn't been dreaming of this one big free agent splash, they would right now have assets like Jose Calderon. And not only would they be in a better position now, but they'd be in a better position to improve. You know, whoever's given up, almost everybody we've seen move has been a sign and trade. And those also, you know, there's a backlash to that. We've had this big four-team trade where Iguodala, Bynum, and Howard all moved, and that didn't work out for anybody but the Orlando Magic, right? So, you know, my working theory that you could get better in sign and trade than you could as a free agent, I guess you should do it with more than 1 year left on somebody's contract, is I guess what I learned from that. Okay, we're pointed in the direction right now where, in some ways, the best thing that can happen from a talent perspective is also potentially the worst thing that could happen to the Mavericks as an organization. This is what I'm calling Team YOLO Mavs. This is a Monta Ellis, Jose Calderon backcourt, a Andrew Bynum, Dirk frontcourt. How do you feel about that?
I don't know, because I think that of the two, Bynum probably comes first, and I really enjoy the concept of a Bynum signing because it represents the kind of high-risk gamble that the Mavs are forced to do at this point, because the team as constructed, generally, we have Bernard James as the main other big man on the roster, with Brandon Wright currently not being signed. So if you sign Andrew Bynum and then another big, like let's just say Lou Amundsen, who ended up on the market today, and Bynum works out, and let's just say he plays 50 games, this is a playoff team. Let's say he plays 15 games. This team is lotto-bound and probably among the worst eight or so teams in the league. You know, Dirk makes Dallas relevant, but I'm really concerned that if he is forced to do a lot of the rebounding work, it's going to grind him into the ground. That's one of my big concerns if we don't sign Bynum. But right. I really like the idea.
Right. I mean, when you look at who's available this year and also who's likely to be available next year, Bynum very likely does not do anything for you. Rumors out of Philly are not good about his health. I understand he participated in a scrimmage in a practice in February and basically couldn't even walk the next day. On the other hand, the Mavs aren't going to sign him if it doesn't look like he can play. On the other hand, he had a knee injury like 4 out of 5 seasons or something like that. On the other hand, if you don't pick up Bynum, who could you possibly pick up in the next 2 years that's going to make a difference for you? And I guess that's the problem, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Monta Ellis, I don't know. You know, they do need scoring. They really do. They've got Dirk scoring, let's say, 24 points a night. A lot of guys who score 10 points a night. Vince Calderon, Wayne Ellington, possibly. The 6-point game. 6-point a game scorer traditionally, but 10 points last year. Doesn't look great from that perspective. In many ways, looks even worse defensively. On the other hand, as I've said, it is currently, without Bynum and Ellis, a smart, a relatively cheap core. I like it, and it's probably going to be worse than any Mavericks team we've seen if they don't add one or two of these guys.
I think that's true, because the team that's currently constructed is probably going to be a lot more consistent than last year's team, because we had a hard time judging what was going on last year, because you remember that stretch of games, it had to be within the first 10 games of the season when the Mavericks shot over 60% for 3 straight games.
Yeah, they were winning every game by like 20 points.
I mean, the team had games where they were blistering on offense, and I remember at some point, I don't remember who it was, maybe it was Zach Lowe, the Mavericks went through the month of March with like one of the best shooting months from a team ever.
Yeah.
And yet the team still had a hard time winning. So, but there were also those games where they shot like 28, 29%. Offensively, the team was a nightmare to predict. Defensively, we knew they were going to have issues, and that was fine. I think this year, we're very much looking at a team, regardless, even if they do sign Bynum or if they don't, we're going to know what we're going to get offensively every night. defensively it's going to be a nightmare, but I think it'll be a lot more at least entertaining because it won't be so frustrating.
Right. I think that's right. And, you know, I can remember sometime around Game 6 last year saying, you know, this is the first Mavs team that I can really trust to put away a team in the fourth quarter after three quarters if they're ahead by a lot. I don't have to worry about it. That turned out to be one of the least true things that I've said in the last many years. Really a shame. Okay, right now we got a smart team. Not very good. We're going to see what happens this next week. Any final thoughts?
The only thought I have right now is that the best person that Dallas has that can attack the bucket is 36 going on 37 in Vince Carter. That's
yep.
my main fear outside of a center at the moment.
That sounds like a good fear.
I'm looking forward to see what they do to address it. I really think that the front office is going to make some interesting choices with how it fills out the roster. I really, you know, I think that whoever ends up on this team has a really good chance to make an argument for minutes simply because the team's going to have some struggles. So Carlisle's going to try everything. So I'm looking forward to it, I think, at this point.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sure. Thank you.